Chapter 17. Hey, Sims. I tried to sound casual, but I suck at faking it. Even over the phone, I'm sure she could tell I was lying. How was your vacation? Or honeymoon? She sighed, even before she said anything.
It was going just fine, sir.
Was?
Before you called to ruin my day.
I'm not... How do you know?
I know you.
Fair enough.
What is it this time?
I have an opportunity for you. She must have set the phone down, or maybe she threw it across the room because I could hear her cursing at me, but it was muffled. Still, I could hear that her vocabulary of swear words was impressive. Crap. I wish I had recorded the call because I wanted to write down some of the good ones. Wisely, I kept my mouth shut and waited for her to talk to me, or end the call, or drop the phone into the toilet. It was her move. Nothing I could do about it. Finally, after I pulled up an app to play a game on my phone, I heard her fumble with the phone. Maybe I should not have used the word opportunity, I said.
You think?
Sorry. The opportunity isn't just for you, it is also for Frank. She did not immediately respond. She also did not immediately throw the phone into the ocean.
For both of us?
Yes. Listen, can we talk face to face sometime?
Sometime like when?
Soon, hopefully. Where are you? That information I could have asked Skippy for, or just pinged her phone's location. That would have been invading her privacy, so I didn't do that.
We're in Taos.
Taos?
Yes, she said, irritated. New Mexico.
What is wrong with that?
Nothing.
I've never been there, that's all. Are you having fun?
Yes. We spent a couple days in Santa Fe. Frank has family there.
Oh, so you met his family?
Yes. Don't ask.
I won't.
Can we meet? Just for an hour, I promise. This is important?
Important enough. It's good news, I promise.
We are going to the Grand Canyon the day after tomorrow.
Looking at my phone, I checked the time zone for Taos, New Mexico.
What about tonight, like after dinner? I thought you and Adams were in the tropics somewhere.
We were. It was great. We're back now. I only need to talk with you for an hour or so. I have a stealth panther. I could be at Taos in 20 minutes. No one will ever know I was there.
You have a personal panther?
Why didn't I get that perk?
You didn't sign up for the premium package, I joked.
Seriously, Skippy will send a dropship for you anytime you want.
How are you getting to the Grand Canyon?
We're driving.
Driving?
A panther could have you there quick, and you wouldn't need to worry about paparazzi along the way.
We are driving, she insisted. You know, like normal people do. We're stopping at Albuquerque and Flagstaff and the Petrified Forest. Frank wants to stop in Winslow to get a selfie at the statue there.
What statue?
Google it, she sighed.
You really want to meet tonight?
If it's convenient.
She did not say whether it was convenient or not.
Make it quick.
I promise.
I landed the Panther in a dry wash outside of town. The belly jets kicked up dust, but there was a stiff wind blowing that night, and no one was around to notice.
Walking up to the road, I waited only a minute before a self-driving car pulled up and a rear door popped open.
Open the driver's door, Skippy. I want to sit up front.
It is really best if you sit in the back, Joe. You can relax back there.
The driver is required to sit in the driver's seat, you ass.
It's dark. No one will notice.
I will. Open the freaking door. I just flew a dropship here. I think I can handle a car.
There is nothing to hit in the sky, Joe. I saw you driving on vacation. You returned that rental car with a big dent in the hood.
That's because a coconut fell on it.
Because you parked it under a palm tree.
Fine. I won't touch the wheel unless the car is about to crash into an armadillo or something. In the dark, I couldn't wear my sunglasses for disguise, so I settled for the baseball cap with my jacket collar turned up against the evening chill. Unfortunately, I had shaved off the scruffy beard I had been growing on vacation.
We met at an outdoor restaurant of the hotel where Sims was staying. She had gotten us a table in a secluded corner. There was a fire pit to take away the chill of the high desert evening, and I was glad for the jacket I wore.
Frank leaned over and put his arm around Jennifer, a protective gesture. I liked seeing that, especially as she leaned into him. She was happy. She deserved to have someone who made her feel safe and secure. Sims sure as hell had spent way too much time not feeling safe.
"What's this about, Joe?" he asked, looking straight at me.
"Avalon." I appreciated him being direct with me, so I got to the point. "We need to establish a presence there."
"We do?"
he asked, surprised, sharing a look with Sims.
"We just left Avalon."
"Yeah, sorry. I had to bring everyone back home. There weren't enough supplies there to keep going." The survey team had been on Avalon a lot longer than planned, and they had been running out of food and medicine when Valkyrie arrived. Attempts to grow food there had been hit or miss. A fungus growing out of control destroyed several crops of wheat and corn. The biologists were confident that eventually we could sustain a presence there, but a lot of work was needed to create a stable biosphere that allowed plants from Earth to grow.
I didn't know whether the UN would authorize another flight out there, and I couldn't leave you stranded.
Frank shrugged, understanding my reasoning, but not happy about it.
"Why go back? Earth is safe now."
He looked at her again, and his eyes narrowed.
"Isn't it? You told us we are safe now."
"It is safe." That answer wasn't good enough for either of them.
"There are degrees of safety. We are safe from extinction."
"Shit." Sims set down her wine glass.
"What, honey?" Frank asked.
"They're not a credible threat, are they?"
"What aren't?"
Frank looked from her to me, confused.
"The Elder weapons. There's no escalation factor," I said to her, ignoring her civilian husband.
"It's not like each side could exchange tactical nukes, then pull back from the brink. There won't be any riding out a first nuke and negotiating a ceasefire. Elder weapons are not like the nuclear deterrent on Earth. They're a simple switch, on or off. If we flip the switch, everyone dies."
"Jennifer, what is he talking about?" Frank asked in a voice calmer than I would have been.
"The aliens," she explained. "The enemy. They know we can trigger our elder weapons if we are on the brink of extinction, but only then. Lighting off those weapons would be committing suicide for our entire species. We won't do it unless our backs are absolutely against the wall, and there is no other choice."
"Avalon. We need the beta site to make the elder weapons a credible option."
"Right," I agreed. Frank's expression was suddenly not so happy, and he was unhappy with his wife also. The two of us had shut him out of the conversation.
"Will someone please explain what the hell you're talking about?"
"Game theory," I said. "Specifically, war game theory. The beta site is outside the galaxy where, as far as we know, there are no sentinels, and there definitely are no aliens. If we can establish a significant population of humans at the beta site, maybe at more than one site outside the Milky Way, our species will be able to survive if we are forced to trigger elder weapons here."
Frank's face turned white. "Oh my God."
"He's right," Jennifer said, squeezing his hand.
"Who thinks like that?" he asked, appalled.
"Someone has to."
She patted his hand.
"I can't believe this." He jerked his hand away. "You are talking about using those horrific weapons?"
She shook her head.
"We are talking about not having to ever use them. A substantial, self-sustaining presence at the beta site means the elder weapons here will be viewed as a credible threat. Aliens will know they can't push us here because we do have an option for survival if we use them. A human presence at the beta site makes the strategic situation in this galaxy more stable and safe for everyone."
"You think about this stuff?"
"I am a soldier," she reminded him.
Turning back to me, she asked,
"What do you need me to do, sir?"
I looked at Frank first.
"I'm sorry to upset you. I'm just making a suggestion, not giving orders."
"What is your suggestion?" she asked.
"Chang is about to be appointed the UN Secretary for Homeworld Security," I announced, putting a finger to my lips. "It's hush-hush for now, but it's going to happen in a few days."
"Good move," Sims observed. "For him and for Earth."
"I agree. Chotek will be ambassador at large for Earth to represent us in negotiations with the Maxalts, and eventually with the Spiders, too. Hans Chotek's good standing in the diplomatic community had miraculously been restored now that the United Nations needed an envoy who had extensive experience off-world. Also, the Jarraptha specifically requested Chotek for negotiations. They wanted to meet the diplomat who started a war. Maybe some people still avoided him at fancy cocktail parties. I don't think Hans cared. Right now, he's working on a deal with the Beatles. I can't say what that is yet. We're getting the band back together? She asked, amused. Something like that. Frank was not amused. I hope you don't plan on playing your greatest hits. Starting a civil war, blowing up starships, that sort of thing. No, I assured him. This is a rare case where the audience would rather hear stuff from our new album. What new album? Sims asked. We'll call it Peace Talks, maybe, I said. Based on the way he looked at me, Frank was not convinced of my peaceful intentions. What do you want Jen to do? Both of you, I replied. Together. Avalon will have civilian leadership, but we need someone to command the military presence there. If you're interested. I raised an eyebrow to Sims. If it makes any difference, the Pentagon told me that is a billet for a full colonel. You would get a promotion? Frank pursed his lips as he looked at her. That does not make a difference, she said, but her eyes told another story. What matters is, are you interested, Frank? She patted his arm. I need to think about it. What do you think, honey? A fresh start? An opportunity to build a new society out there? This would be permanent? She asked me. Not unless you want to stay there, I said. It's a 3-year assignment, but transport ships will be going out there regularly, and they'll be mostly empty for the flight home. This may shock you, I grinned. But the UN will probably want you to come back to Earth once a year to report. I am shocked. She pressed a hand to her chest. What if we decline? Is there another candidate? There is a long list. You are the only American on the list. I shrugged. UNEF feels that with me commanding Valkyrie and Ross and Perkins running the Alien Legion, if we keep that going, there are too many Americans at the top of the command structure. The civilian leader of Avalon will be from one of the other 12 nations, or possibly from a non-UNEF country. You are technically not acting as an American, she reminded me. That's a legal thing. I dismissed her comment with a wave of a hand. I am still an American, just acting on behalf of a foreign government. I had to register as a foreign agent to comply with U.S. law. Hey, I added when she raised a skeptical eyebrow at me. Before World War II, MacArthur commanded the Philippines Armed Forces, and he was an American citizen. That's a bit different situation, but I won't argue, she told me. How long do we have to think about it? A couple weeks. No colonists are going out to the beta site for months, probably, but UNEF is anxious to start the planning. Frank pursed his lips again. I don't know if I like you, he said to her, going back out there. You risked your life for years. This would be a logistics position, she explained. I would be getting back to my specialty. That's right, sir. She addressed that comment to me. UNEF is not planning to station warships at Avalon. We don't have warships, other than Valkyrie. No, I agreed. The whole point of the beta site is that we don't need warships out there, or any kind of weapons. Eventually, it would be nice to station a transport ship there for emergencies, and we should explore more of Sculptor if we can. Listen, UNEF is excited about the idea of setting up multiple beta sites. There are plenty of satellite galaxies and star clusters that aliens don't have access to. If you get bored on Avalon, there will be other beta sites that will need to be set up. Whoa. Frank's shoulders slumped. Surveying multiple worlds? You are a scientist, honey, Sims lightly punched his shoulder. This is a great opportunity. I suppose. The science team leader can't be an American, I warned. Sorry. I'm not sorry. Frank's expression brightened. I'm interested in doing science,
not an administrative bullshit. He kissed Sims on the cheek.
We'll think about it, okay? This calls for more wine. He lifted his empty glass. I'll get us a refill. As he walked toward the building, Sims leaned forward.
Peace talks? You really think that will work?
We're giving it a shot, I shrugged. It has to work, or Earth could become a battleground.
I can tell you right now. She watched her husband as he entered the building. Frank will go for it. This is a great opportunity for him.
What about you?
It is a great opportunity for me, too. I want to be with him. It's nice to have some stability in my life.
Yeah, I know.
How are you and Adams getting along?
Great. The whole living with someone thing takes getting some used to.
You're not living together. She rolled her eyes. You're on vacation.
Yeah, well, it feels like we're playing house. Next week, we are visiting her folks.
Meeting her parents?
That amused her.
Do you have any advice for me? Just be yourself, but not too much yourself.
Great, I groaned. I'm worried about the whole celebrity thing. It's a pain in the ass. Skippy rented a cabin on a lake for her folks. We're meeting them there.
How is your family?
We chatted about mundane stuff like normal people do. Then Frank came back with a bottle of wine and a tray of snacks. When my phone beeped to remind me it was time to go, I choked up a bit. Sims and I had been together for a long time, and we had rubbed the rough edges off each other to become a great team. With her going out to Avalon, I might not see her for a long time. She hugged me. I hugged her back. We were sitting on the porch while Margaret's mother worked in the kitchen and her father was down at the lake fishing. He told us he was catching our dinner, but his wife was skeptical, so she was making chicken and dumplings. Margaret and I offered to help in the kitchen, but her mother shooed us away. Truthfully, I think both her parents needed a break from us. From me. Because I was now a celebrity, I came with a lot of baggage and it sucked for everyone involved. Her parents had read so much about me, some accurate and some completely made up, that meeting me was inevitably a disappointment. The first night we were together, her father had made an awkward joke about the pirates saving the world again. My guess is they just didn't know what to say to me. Because I was terrified of saying the wrong thing around them and getting Margaret upset with me, I didn't talk much. That left a lot of awkward gaps in the conversation. When her father went to go fishing, he pointed to a second pole hanging in the cabin and asked if I wanted to come with him. It was almost comical to see the look of relief on his face when I declined. This is nice, I said to Margaret, sitting back on the couch and putting my feet on the coffee table. This is painful, she whispered with a glance back into the cabin. We could hear her mother banging things around in the kitchen. Now it was quiet in there. You need to try, Joe.
I am trying. You are sitting there with a forced grin on your face and you're not saying anything.
I don't know what to say. What?
A phone on the coffee table pinged softly and Margaret picked it up.
Oh, another wrong number.
She shook the phone in disgust, ending the call and tossed it back on the coffee table.
My mother got this burner phone so I could call her, but she keeps getting some woman calling for a Pastor Redmond.
The phone rang again, and I grabbed it before Margaret could. I'll answer it, I offered.
You're not a pastor.
No, I'm a bishop. I winked. That's even better.
Holding up a finger for silence, I answered the call, deepening my voice and putting on my awful southern accent. I sounded like a drunk Colonel Sanders. Getting up from the couch, I stepped away.
Well, hello there.
I said in a deep voice, trying my terrible southern accent.
This is Pastor Redmond. How may I help you?
Oh, thank you, a woman said in a very pleasant southern accent. I have been trying to call you, but some rude woman kept telling me I had the wrong number. This is Josephine Washington.
I'm very pleased you called, Miss Washington.
Miss Washington, she insisted.
Of course. I am so glad you called. I was hoping you would call me.
You were? She asked, hopefully.
Yes, you are so hot.
Oh, Pastor Redmond?
When I am up there giving a sermon, I look at you and think, Lord, I want to bang her so bad.
Oh, that is... Oh.
What else do you think I'm praying for?
Well, she huffed. I never...
That's the problem. You should.
Miss Washington ended the call just as Margaret yanked the phone out of my hand, and just as her mother stepped out the door onto the porch.
Was that a call on my phone?
Her mother asked, staring at me in shock. That was the total of what my brain was capable of thinking at that moment.
What do I tell her when she calls back?
Her mother directed that question at her daughter, since clearly I was incapable of being a responsible adult.
Mama, you...
She won't call back, I said.
If she does?
Mrs. Adams put hands on her hips and glared at me.
Then I shrugged.
I better ask Skippy to find Pastor Redmond's real phone number because that guy is gonna get lucky.
Which was the wrong thing to say to Margaret's mother, and also the right thing.
She glared at me for another half second, then burst into laughter. Margaret went from a deer in the headlights expression to following her mother's lead.
I won't do it again, I promised, handing the phone to Margaret's mother.
Sorry.
She held up her hands, refusing to take the phone.
Nuh-uh, Joseph.
She shook her head, but there was a twinkle in her eyes.
This is your problem now.
Okay, I pulled my Z phone out of a pocket.
Use this one. It's secure.
She held the credit card thin phone delicately.
Isn't this your phone? The special one?
She knew Margaret had a Z phone.
It's yours now.
Skippy will load your profile on it if he hasn't already done it. I have half a dozen more Z phones in my bag. She automatically looked up toward the sky.
Skippy is watching us? Now?
Not all the time, Mama, Margaret assured her. He probably assigned a submind to keep track of us in case we need him. He doesn't spy on us.
You're sure about that? How can you be sure?
Because he knows that Margaret... I also looked up and shook a fist as a warning in case he was stupid enough to spy on us. Would beat his ass if he did. Dinner that night was slightly less awkward, partly because Margaret's mother now shared a secret with us. She hadn't told her husband about me answering the wrong number call. A couple times I caught a glimpse of her looking at me and smiling. She was remembering the call or she was smiling at me. Either way was good. Her father had not come back with any fish, which was fine with everyone. Conversation still lagged a bit. No one wanted to talk about the pirates, and as we didn't have shared experiences, I mostly stayed quiet. A few times Margaret kicked me under the table, and I asked one of the bland, safe questions from a list she suggested before dinner. It was nice, bland stuff, like how her parents met, whether they had gone on vacation the previous summer, things like that. Somehow we got onto the subject of Margaret's sister.
You know that boy Darren?
Her father shook his head. Who's Darren? I asked before Margaret could kick me. I had moved my leg out of the way because my shin was getting sore.
Darren and Susanna used to date in high school, Margaret told me with a warning look.
I knew her younger sister was in college in either her second or third year.
What about Darren?
She directed the question to her father.
He entered the seminary last fall.
The seminary?
Margaret was clearly surprised at that.
He talked about it. I didn't know he made a decision. Does he plan to come back after he graduates?
Her parents shared an uncomfortable glance.
We don't know, her father said after an awkward pause. It won't matter. Darren has taken a vow of celibacy.
Celibacy, I snorted and rolled my eyes.
Here's another valuable pro tip for you guys out there. When you are dating a girl, it is not a good idea to tell your father that you aren't a big fan of celibacy.
Her father was as embarrassed by my outburst as I was.
Darren is a very serious young man. He looked at me. He feels that celibacy puts him in touch with a higher power, he said as he took a sip of iced tea.
Like his hand? I asked. My timing sucks.
Her father choked and spewed iced tea all over the table. The dinner conversation kinda went downhill from there. Although, by downhill, this time I mean like riding a bicycle. It gets easier going downhill. Her parents must have decided that I am truly a knucklehead, which I guess made me more approachable. I apologized and helped clear the table while Margaret's eyes glared maser beams into my skull. A delicious pecan pie was served. There is a vicious rumor that I ate two pieces of pie. I can neither confirm nor deny those spurious accusations. We stopped avoiding the subject of the Merry Band of Pirates, but we kept it light, telling funny stories about the crew and not mentioning any of the bad stuff that happened. At one point, her mother patted my arm. "Oh, Joseph, Margaret didn't tell us that you are funny?" That remark from her mother got me out of the doghouse. Margaret stopped kicking me. Mostly. I still said stupid stuff that justified a kick. After dinner, we sat on the porch until the bugs started biting. At that point, Margaret and I made our excuses and walked to our cabin. Her mother pulled her aside and they talked while they both looked at me. Oh, shit. That had to be trouble. "Sorry," I said when the cabin door closed behind us. "It won't happen again." "It had better happen again." She smashed me back into the door, pressing against me and kissing me fiercely. "What was that for?" I asked, bewildered when she pulled away.
"You, Joseph Bishop, are an idiot. But you're funny. My parents approve of you."
"They do?"
"Not the inappropriate jokes. They like that you make me happy."
"I do?"
"Yes."
She kissed me again.
"You do."
"Cool. Hey, do you want to make me happy right now?"
"Let me guess."
She put on a mock frown but kept her body pressed against mine. Running a finger along the waistband of her pants, I nibbled her ear.
"I want to get in touch with a higher power."
"I'll bet you do," she laughed. All I can say is that Darren guy has no idea what he is missing.